Well, Mr. Ron Tank, today I am in class. You're going to school me, educate me and the rest of us on really investment and investing, because you are the creator of the Bulletproof Investor, and you are also the author of Moses of Wall Street. So you've been both, what, a Bible teacher, you an investor, a family man, a father, all of the above, and a great guy. So, yeah, I just want to get this one real quick out of the way. Folks, you can go to rontank.com, and you can take a look at everything that we're going to be talking about today. And we're really going to talk about, you know, investments, why and if investing is important, and is it safe to invest in a volatile market such as what's happening right now? And for guys like me, is it ever too late for me to invest in, you know, in this, really the stock market or in stocks in general? And really, what is required to succeed in investing? And we're not going to get into real estate investing or anything like that. This is mainly about the stock market. So, Ron, I hope I didn't take it all away. So, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chuck. So, I appreciate the interest and your audience, and it's never too late. So, the first thing I heard you say there, and it really isn't. You know, if I was 70 years old, and that's the one thing great about investing, Chuck, is it doesn't matter how old you are. And whether you're 20, 15, 20 years old, which I'd start at 15 if I had the option, but 20 is not bad. But if you're 70 years old and your mind's good, you can still invest. You know, a lot of things you work yourself out of and your body just isn't going to let you do it anymore. But nowadays, you know, with investing, you can do it when you're 80 years old. So as long as you're of sound mind, you know, why not? It's never too late.
That's good to hear, because that's going to be me investing in my latter years. But yeah, we might as well jump into that real quick about the time frame. When is it best to invest? And I know that sounds silly, because we'll say, oh, well, like I said, 18. If I was 18 again, I would invest in the stock market. So can we take it from there, and then we could jump into talking about your book?
Yeah, if you were, so starting out at a younger age is best, and that's who I like to help the most, because they have the longest amount of time to be involved. And time is on your side if you're in the market. It allows you more time to compound returns over time, over the years. And so I would say, you know, for somebody at 15, 18 years old, that is really good. You know, and if I could go back and talk to myself at, even in college, Chuck, if I could go back and talk to myself in college, I'd say, hey, you need to invest in your education, not only maybe going to college, but your education in investing as well. Take the time to learn from somebody who's done it. Colleges probably don't teach it, but it doesn't mean you can't learn it. And yeah, pretty much what I've discovered, Chuck, is you're going to learn it on your own one way or another. If you get involved, it's either going to cost you money in your losses and your mishandlings of the market, or you're going to educate yourself, which probably costs you some money. And you might do a little bit of both. I would, you know, steer towards the education side, but, you know, that younger age is just better. But if somebody that's older, you know, you can still do really well in a short period of time. And if you start early, you've got the best chances of really seeing the benefits over your lifetime.
You know, there's two things that you just said just now is the compounded interest. So compounded interest is huge. So if you have more time, that's going to be better for you. The second thing really is investment in education. So investment in yourself is also important to learn. And I think something else too, if you start early, you have enough time to, oh, what do we want to say? Make up a difference if you lose something. So don't look at jumping into the stock market or stocks as a get-rich-quick scheme, right?
Yeah, right. And you, the losing thing you just mentioned, Chuck, so most people go into it with, I don't want to make a mistake, or they think I don't want to lose money. But what I've learned is you need to expect to have some losses along the way. Your job is to limit those losses and to develop a system that says, if I can get this right, I shouldn't have much of a loss after I get in because my timing's good. and you won't incur them, but you're not going to get be perfect at it. So you have to expect some things just not to work quite right. And it could be that maybe the market turns on you right at the time you see something that you think you should be entering into, and you do, but then the market goes against you. And a lot of people will wrestle with that, and they'll say, well, the market's coming down, but that's no big deal. But what I teach is that even if you're 18 years old, you should learn how to understand, is the market healthy and uptrending? So I try to avoid bull and bear terms a little bit, because they tend to make you think they're going to stay that way. So if you say, well, we're in a bull market, everybody tends to relax and say, well, then I don't need to pay attention. But that's not true. So even though you identify that you're in a bull market, you're looking for the signs to say this bull market's beginning to struggle, and not act like a bull market that should at this point. And it takes a little bit of time, but within about 4 to 6 weeks, you'll spot the problems that are occurring. And then you can say, well, now based on the market, I need to be on defense more and not be playing offense. So it's kind of knowing, what do I do? And people say, well, you can't know what the market's going to do, right? But you can know what it has done and what it is doing. And what it is doing will inform you as to whether or not it's going to continue to be a bull market, or maybe it's switching into a bear market, or at least a correction. So your behaviors can model that a little bit, and you should be proactive at kind of limiting your losses. And also, Chuck, letting your winners run. So I've got a guy I'm talking to. He's in my group. He's been a client for about 3 years, went through my training. He's in my inner circle. I talked to him last week. He said, hey, Ron, I'm up 179% on one that we talked about here just a few months ago. You know, so you say, think about time, Chuck. One stock's up about 300% just in the last 4 or 5 months. Mm. And he got in at about the right times, up 179%. So he said, well, if I was 80 years old, that's pretty good return in 3 months. And you say, well, that must be risky. And I'd say, well, no, because if you have good timing and a good loss-cutting plan, your risk is limited at the beginning. But once you're in and it's working, you've got to be able to let these things run for a period of time. Like people that may have owned Apple or Cisco Systems back in the 90s, you know, it takes sometimes years for these companies to mature. You have to be willing to sit there and let them go.
Ron, I just want to ask real quick, for the very, very newbies out there, can you give a short explanation of bull and bear market? I know that sounds very, very basic, but I just want to take people to understand what bull and bear, because you hear that term a lot and you use it just now.
Yeah, and that's very good, Chuck. So bull market, generally speaking, so there's time frames that you can kind of characterize these by in general terms. So let's start with the bear market. So most people say, well, when would you say we're in a bear market? Well, there's two definitions that I know of, Chuck, that people will finally grasp a hold and say we're in a bear market. And that's generally if the markets have reached a high. So like, let's take last year in January of 2022. Markets have reached a high and you start coming off from that top. If you're down for 9 months or more below that peak, then you can kind of refer to yourself as in a bear market, because we haven't been able to reach new highs for a period of 9 months. Also, they'll say if we're below that high by 20% or more, even if it's less than 9 months, then people like to characterize it as a bear market, because now you're down 20%. That's severe enough that somebody says something's maybe not quite right, so we're probably in a bear market. And sometimes, Chuck, we've had bear markets that even in COVID in 2020, the markets were off 30, 35% in less than 3 months. So people were saying we were in a bear market, but guess what? That bear market ended in April of 2020. So as soon as everybody identified that we were into one, within a month, we were heading out of one. And you say, well, so a bull market then, it generally will be making new highs, and they last anywhere from, on average, you'd say you'll probably run a year and a half to 3 years. You'll probably run into some kind of turbulence along the way. And then if you say, well, just like now, we've come off the bottom in October, January, the market's finally decided to kind of power back up for real. That was pretty much on par for the end of a normal bear market where we just saw. And now we're heading up. So now it's could we enter back into a bear market again? Well, we could, but you're going to have to show the signs of that. And right now there's no signs of it. So bull markets tend to run. They make higher highs as we go. They usually start from a low where nobody ever sees them. Our low was that where this one started was October of last year. So we were about between nine and 10 months off the highs. So we were in bear market territory. The markets did what they need to do. So there's a sign you look for, Chuck, that tells you that, how do I know when the bottoms are in? And there's two ways when you know you've got a really good one. But then you're into a bull market. People won't recognize it in the beginning. Now everybody's starting to recognize that this market has legs. It may continue to have legs. I'd be surprised if it didn't for longer than most would think right now. Okay. So there's always ways to say bull bear market. Not so really what I would tell people to do is learn, is the market healthy and uptrending, or is the market now in a downtrend and acting poorly? If you can just make those switches and not worry too much about the terms, you'll be better off.
Okay. Well, thanks for the explanation on that, because I know a lot of people may not know, like I said, the terms of bull and bear. So we hear that often, but we may not know exactly what it is. I think this is a perfect time, too, to talk a little bit about the triple tank system and your book, because you are the creator of the Bulletproof Investor. So can we dive into that a little bit?
Yeah. So, Chuck, here's the thing with that, with the Moses of Wall Street. So that came about because several reasons. One, it's somebody asked me one day, they said, hey, Tank, if you had to label yourself with one, just a tagline that would tell somebody who you are and what you do, what would it be? And boy, I struggled with that, Chuck, for quite a while trying to think, how do I tell them that I'm about the Bible, but I'm about investing? Most people don't think of those two things coming together. And I said, well, you know, what came to mind was the Wolf of Wall Street. So that was, you know, of course, I tried to watch that movie because people were asking me about it. I made it 5 minutes. I said, no, that's trash. I'm not watching that. No interest in it. So that's what I tell people. If they ask me if I've seen it, I say, yeah, I tried to. Saw 5 minutes, turned it off. Bad stuff in my head. Don't need it. But the title came about because I thought of that movie, and then I thought about what I do, and I thought, well, I'm not the Wolf of Wall Street. I'm the Moses of Wall Street. I'm bringing a biblical approach to it. And I feel like I'm leading people, trying to walk you through there, steer you through it, help you get to the promised land a little bit. So, but the book is about something I found one day, Chuck, when I was watching a show about lions on TV. I was doing a Bible study at the time in Acts chapter 10, and it was about Peter being shown a vision on the roof of a house that he was on working at the time. And God showed him a vision, and he had to show him that vision 3 times. Peter kept trying to tell him what he thought he saw in the vision, and God was like, no, and he tried again. And the 3rd time, he stopped, and Peter got that vision after the 3rd time. And as I'm reading this, on TV there's lions, and this guy's approaching this wild lion in a cage. 2 guys were approaching this female lion, and they're describing her behavior, how approaching her 1 time, she'll give you this kind of a flipping of the tail to warn you that you're in her space and she doesn't like it. If you acknowledge it and back up, she'll reward you by leaving you alone. If you approach her the 2nd time, she'll let you come a little bit closer on that 2nd approach. But then instead of wagging or flipping her tail in a little bit irritated manner, she's probably going to lunge and growl. And she'll scare you to death because you're going to think that means she's coming to get you. But she probably won't. She'll try to avoid the conflict, but she'll give you some teeth and a growl, maybe some hair standing up on her back, and she wants you to back away. So what do? The guy says you back away. You acknowledge her threat, and you back away and reward her by backing away. She'll reward you by letting you live, is what happened. If you approach the line the 3rd time, you're a T-bone steak. You know, you're her dinner. And the market does that to people. When I was working on this Bible study, I read about Peter, a vision 3 times. I saw the lion. All of a sudden, this chart popped into my head because we were in early 2006. Well, in 2005, the market had declined 3 times, and it was clearly visible on a chart. If I showed you a chart of 2005 and said, hey, look for a set of stair steps going down, that's what it kind of looks like. But the stair steps are pointed instead of flat. They run up. And I thought, boy, could that actually be why the market did what it did last year, is what happened to Peter. I'm seeing it happen with a lion, and it takes people three times to figure out that they're getting beat up. Chuck, that's what the market's doing to you at the time. It's beating you up, and you feel it. You're going to see it. You're going to recognize it. And eventually, you're either going to do something about it or you're not. If you're going to do something, what can you do to not being the T-bone for the lion? When it comes to the stock market, what you can do is get out. So people feel this pressure, this threat of the market taking money away, then it gives a little bit back, and then it takes it away, then it gives it back, and then it takes it away a third time. And if you're going to come out, you're going to do it right there. If you don't do that, you're probably not coming out no matter what. You're probably just not going to come out of there. If you are going to come out, you did. Now the market's free to advance again, because all of the shorter term minded people that are looking and feeling that pressure have reacted to it. And I spent a couple of years, Chuck, studying this, going through the Bible. Is there more than just Peter? I found out, you know, Satan tempted Jesus three times. There's John being asked by Jesus if he loved him, and he asked him three times. Peter denied Jesus three times. I mean, there's so many different repetitions of three. It became really powerful, Chuck, and I went through the market, and I found just example going clear back to the 1890s, looking at charts of the indexes, going, this is just history repeating itself. Why does it happen? The Bible tells me why, because the third time is the charm. So you heard that saying, Chuck?
Definitely have, and I was going to say, we don't want to get too philosophical, but you're right. The number three, I'll just, for my end, say there is something about the number three.
There's a lot of power. And in the book I talk about it, there's a chapter called God's Fingerprint in there, Chuck, and I go through some threes that I bet you people have never thought about, and you look at and see how many and where they're at. And I've had people say, Ron, that was the most fascinating chapter of the book, because I've never heard that or seen it.
There's something that you said in there just now, and especially on the number three. So, you know, when to get in, well, I guess The Gambler's a perfect song. You know when to hold them, and you know when to get out and things like that. So when does one know? Say I buy an individual stock. I'm not getting an ETF. I'm not looking at dividends or anything like that. But I buy one stock because I've been told it's on the way up. So I buy it. It goes up 20%. And then 6 months later, you see it declining. It's back down to where you bought it. And then it drops another 10%. Is there a blueprint, forgive me for using that word, a blueprint of saying, oh, if it drops 20% below what you purchased within 9 months, get rid of it? Or do you hold it and wait?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And I'll tell you how I operate anyway, Chuck, is I force myself to, so I look at charts, mm-hmm. you know, stock charts that are price, action, and volume. And I'm letting that tell me the supply and demand equation, because that's what the market's about, supply and demand. So I'm going to force myself to time my entry. So I use the T3, for example, to do that, which is the triple tank system. So the short version, I call it the T3. So I'm going to use the T3 as my timing tool to get in. So if you do that right, what I found is most of the time you're going to have about somewhere between maybe 2% to about 8% of a downdraft that could be pretty normal. But I'm going to use the low of that T3 as my exit. It shouldn't go there. If it does, I'm out. If that's 3% below where I bought it, it's 3. If it's 5, it's 5. I'm probably not going to allow it to be more than about 8 or so. And if somebody said, well, I bought this stock and it ran up and I was ahead 20, but now all of a sudden I'm back to even, I don't let myself get ahead and then take a loss. So if, because that again forces me to enter at the right time. And if a stock makes a 20% advance and it comes all the way back to where I started, it shouldn't really do that behavior-wise. That's telling me there's too much weakness there. And if you're in the middle of a run and you buy it and it keeps going up and then all of a sudden it's coming down, you could be in the middle of the start of a bear market or market correction. So you really don't know why is my stock all of a sudden putting me at a loss. And you have to look at the charts, and I look at the charts, Chuck, as I would a builder would a blueprint, or a doctor would an x-ray. And I say, that chart will tell me the facts. It doesn't lie. It's real people moving real money. There is no opinion in that chart. It is pure supply and demand. Regardless of what anybody says they're doing or might do, this chart is what they've actually done. So I can read that, look at that. So I just don't let things turn into a loss, Chuck. And if I didn't do anything else, I'd say, if I ever bought something and I wasn't reading a chart, I would just never let myself lose more than about 8 or 9% in anything.
Okay.
But I also, Chuck, if you said, Ron, you can't look at a chart to buy it and try to time this, I'd be scared to death of the market. I'd be scared to step in at just some obscure time point where somebody says, hey, we're in a bull market, how come you're not in there? Well, you might have been in the bull market for a year and a half before somebody convinces you to get in. And you could be right near the end of it or even starting into a correction. And if you didn't have a loss cutting rule, you could find yourself down 20, 30, 40, 50%. And then what are you going to do? Either you turn into a long-term investor or you might panic out right at the bottom at leg three, you know, on that third decline because you're not looking at a chart. So most of the education, I'd say, Chuck, has to come in the form of how do I read a stock chart and learn how supply and demand works in the market,
okay,
you know, and learn how to identify where you're at in a bull market or in a bear market and where you're at.
All right, you've given a perfect example of why investors, beginning investors, even maybe mid-level or some advanced, need to continue education and learn and read and be able to read charts. That tells me that somebody like me needs to go to somebody like you and invest in myself, and that means pay somebody to learn. So that was a perfect example, because I played the stock market with play money, and I was like doing really good, and that was in 2019, 2020. So 2021, I'm like I'm jumping in all in. And I hate to admit it, Ron. Do I dare even say this? Out of the 20 stocks that I hold in my portfolio, 12 have lost 95% or more. I kept on saying, I'm going to stay in there. And now I don't see any way out. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, Chuck, that I'm glad you brought that up because that's the main point. So if somebody, what if a person only bought three and all their money was in them and they're down 95%, say you can crush it. One of the things that you said though right there, Chuck, is key to me. So people say, Ron, do you think you should I get in the market but just do it in a simulated account, paper trade, they call it, you know, paper invest. I'll just pretend that I'm buying these stocks and see what happens. So there's a good thing and a bad thing about that, Chuck. The good thing is if you decide to paper trade, it'll force you to understand whether you have any kind of a system you're using or whether you're just throwing darts. You know what I mean? You will, because you'll have to decide, well, when would I buy this and why am I buying it? And hopefully you're asking yourself some of those type questions, you know, to decide when and why. So you'll figure out real quick, do I have a loss cutting system? You'll find that out too, because if you're paper trading, you have to make decisions to get in and get out both. So you got to protect your money, but you got to be able to get into the market. So you'll find that out. That's the good thing. It'll tell you, do I have any kind of a system I'm using or am I just winging it? The bad news is the paper trading does not bring the emotions,
yes,
along with the real money aspect, and that to me is more important than the other. It's real money. It gets your heart going. It means something to you. And if you have any money in the market that means something to you, the emotions come into play, and that's not real when you're paper trading.
You're absolutely right about that, because that when you're paper trading, like I said, you could throw darts and you could say, oh, I did really good there, oh, I did really bad there, but there is no emotional tie, so you're still playing.
Yeah. And if you don't take it for real, then how can you manage all of your money? If somebody said, hey, I want you to take all the money you have and I want you to put it in the stock market, well, you'd have no confidence, because you'd be like, well, I just kind of wing it, you know. When I'm down, I think I should buy more, and I'll just wait, it'll come back, and I think I'm right. Market's just not quite right. But somebody that's serious about it, Chuck, they have to treat it like a business and say, you know what? I've got to protect my store. I can't let my store burn down. And my tool is my money.
Yeah.
It's the only tool you have other than your head. So it's your only tool in the business that you're in. And if you say, well, if I lose my tool, I'm out of business. Well, I can't do that. So if you say, well, I have to refine my method to where I know when to get in. I've got a loss cutting system that keeps me from losing locks in any one thing that I buy. I have a program that I add to certain things over time, and I have a system or a method of doing that. And you turn it into a business, and it has to become unemotional, Chuck, but that's what kills people, because your money, and whether it's going up in value or down in value, is one of the most emotional things you will encounter in life, maybe other than getting married or, you know, things like that. People get attached to your money. So you have to learn how to deal with your emotions, and that's an education in itself, Chuck. So somebody can learn a system and how do I go about buying things and selling things and knowing what to buy and when to buy them. Well, you can discover all that stuff. You can learn it. But what you don't know is you're going to have to learn as much about you as you do this system that you need to put to work, because you are the instrument by which the system gets employed, gets used. And if you malfunction, the system won't do you any good. So one thing I tell people, Chuck, I'll just share this with you. So here's what this is the number one thing that I tell people is buying and selling requires a decision and action. Successful investors are quick to decide and act. They don't believe in mistakes. When you have a system, you'll never make a mistake unless you fail to decide and act. See, so people get worried about making mistakes. Well, people will worry about making a mistake thinking, well, I'm down 10%. I don't want to sell that now because it might go back up, and that would be a mistake to sell it if it does go back up 10%. And it's always based on what if. So you can't say, well, I don't want to make mistakes. You won't make a mistake if you have a system to follow. You follow the system. There are no mistakes. The mistake you'll make is not following your system and failing to decide and act on it.
Well, it's all a gamble, but you can lessen the risk if you follow a system, is what it sounds like to me. So, again, I want to stress that it is important to be educated in this, and one way of doing it is to, you know, seek out help through courses and things like that from people such as yourself, and they can always go to rontank.com and get the information. But, you know, right now the market does seem like it's pretty volatile. Again, I'm no expert in this. Obviously, I'm not. Is it a good time to invest, or is there never a better time to invest, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, no, right now, Chuck, so if you said, hey, Tank, which is the market a bull or a bear? It's a bull market. If you said, is it a healthy bull market? So I always look for when does healthy turn into unhealthy. And based on the system I use, I have no reason to believe that this won't continue as of today. Mm-hmm. So, and here's one thing you'll find, I think, Chuck, about investors that, to me, I don't like to make predictions. Right. If somebody said, well, Ron, do you think, you know, I should put money in because we're going to be up higher 6 months from now? Well, I don't know about 6 months from now, but I can tell you right now, the market is a bull market. It's behaving in a healthy manner because the institutional selling is normal that you would see. So if I told you how to spot it and you went and looked for it, you'd say, hey, there's not much there. So there's really no sign anybody's worried about it right now. So the bull market's still in play. It's a matter of, am I in the right place or not at the right time? So it's, again, back to how do I find an individual stock within that market that I could go buy? Somebody said, well, Ron, can I just buy the S&P 500? You could, but then you're in the middle of a bull market. So you're a little bit late trying to get in. The market might correct on you a little bit, put you at a loss. So you might have to employ some loss-cutting rules and figure out how to get back in. Again, it takes some mechanics, you know, Chuck, to know where am I safe, where am I being risky. See, there's times to say, well, if the market gets too far along in this bull market, the farther along it moves, the more risky it becomes. So like for gambling, what you were talking about, I look at gambling as somebody who says, you know, I put money in and whatever turns out, turns out. You know, it's, I'm just going to hope for the best. If I lose some money, oh, well, they tell me I have to be willing to lose some or all of my investment, right? That's always their disclaimer. You got to be willing to lose all. And I'm like, wait a minute, I don't want to lose all my money. I don't know how I'm going to do this. But so if you say, well, I'm going to put money into the market and just hope it works, that's one way. Or you say, I'm going to figure out a system I use so I know exactly when to do it, excuse me, and where, and I'm going to manage the things I buy. And I'm going to sell them if I need to. I'm going to buy more if I think I should. I'm going to buy things and sell them. I manage them. That's not gambling. Now you're actually managing your money. Gambling doesn't require management. Mm-hmm. You can't manage it because it's by its very nature, it's a gamble. It's I give you money. If my horse wins, I win. Right? That's what people think of as a horse track, right? So if you turn the market into that, you'd say, well, if I give you money for this stock or whatever it is I'm buying in the stock market, I'm just giving you money, and whatever happens is what I get, right? If that stock wins, I make money. If it doesn't, I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm just taking chances. And that is gambling. So I say, no, thou shalt not gamble. That's what Moses would tell you, Chuck, is thou shalt not gamble. Thou shalt not gamble. So you have to manage things, and that's a different ballgame. That's being a steward. That's what I say.
You know what? I think for some people who are planning on investing or maybe are in the midst of investing, that's a mind shift that they have to make. So that is definitely something I just now, the aha learning moment, big time for me, is I have to make that mind shift. You touched upon, you know, it's really never too late to invest if your health is good and all that stuff. And you kind of touched on this, but what I'd like to kind of bring this towards the end is what does it take to succeed in investing?
In my opinion, a lot of things. So in the book, I've got the 10 commandments of the successful investor, Chuck, and that's those 10 things. If a person, could you involve yourself with less than 10 of those and still do pretty well? I would say yes. If you said, hey, Ron, what are the top three things that you need to be willing to do? I would say one of the most important is, for me, Chuck, it's I got to keep my faith and keep God first. And the reasons for that is certain things happen when that's true, which is God will keep me from letting greed destroy my financial house, because greed is a motivator that can destroy your financial house. And most people don't even recognize when they're being greedy. They wouldn't even know how to classify what greed means or whether they're being greedy or not. But that's a big key. So I always say, keep first things first. What is first? God's first to me. And then I'd say, well, what's the next most important thing is have a system. You better figure out a system you can use. Don't make it a guesswork, because that turns into gambling. Throwing darts at, you know, like the monkey throwing darts, you know, at stock picks, that's to me is same as gambling. You're just taking your chances. Don't do that. Find a good system. But and probably if I'd say add one more of those 10, I'd be cut your losses short. Learn how to manage. Learn how to be a steward and say, you know, I'm just not going to let this market take 50% of my money. I'm not going to let it do it on any one thing that I put my money into. That's going to force me to get better at my timing. See, if I don't want to get into these loss snares, I have to have better timing to do it. So those three things alone to me are at the top.
Okay.
Chuck, is education, loss cutting rules, and I believe in keeping my faith in God first, not last.
I like those three. And a really big one in there that you mentioned too is really learning to cut your losses, learning to just say, okay, I'm jumping out, and not be, I don't know if the word would be nearsighted, farsighted, or greedy and say, oh, I'm going to wait. And next thing you know, you're at a 95% loss. So, but yes.
those you want to avoid. But you know, I've met people, you know, there was a guy that came, I talked to years ago, And he was worked for a power company, and he told me, he said, "Ron, I can't retire." And I said, "How come?" He said, "I got caught in that bear market." What he did is he sat through the first one in 2003, but then in the banking one in 2008 that bottomed in 2009, he couldn't take the second one, and he finally was tortured enough that he sold out. Because he said, "Well, I can't, if I lose more than half my money, I'm going to be working for another 10 years," and he couldn't do it. So he said, "I had to just take what I had left and run." And then he couldn't figure out how to get back in, so he missed this whole recovery after 2009. Wow. And it's one of those things where you say, well, you know, I told him, I said, you needed to have a system you used where you were willing to not let losses get that big.
Right.
You know, that would have took you out of the top of that bull market in 2000. If you learn how to find the bottom, you can figure out how to get back in. You don't have to sit through all the torture of what a bear market does to people and to your retirement accounts. I just wouldn't do it. Personally, Chuck, I could not do it. You'd have to put a gun to my head, Chuck, to say, "Hey, Ron, you know, I look at my chart and say, no, that's bad news. That market's acting all wrong, but I'm just going to sit here and hope for the best." I'd say, well, that's a gambling mindset. You're just going to hope for the best. Hope is good. Investors need to be hopeful, Chuck, but if it's your primary strategy, I'd say you're in trouble. If hope is your primary strategy, if that's all you have, you know, you can't figure out what, if I come up to you, Chuck, and say, "Why are you hopeful about this stock? Even though you're down 15 or 20%, why are you hopeful?" What would be the answer? See, is it, "Well, I just don't want to make a mistake and sell it now." Or, you know, I have to admit a mistake if I sell it, because now I actually lost money. You know, some people think that way. And I'd say, yeah, but why would you stay in it? Why would you hold it? Why are you hopeful right now? What is the reasoning behind that? And to me, there's only a few reasons. And I would still say, even if you had good ones, they're bad because you're down 20% and it should have been cut at 8 or 9.
Wow.
You know, just.
Yeah. Hope and prayer just doesn't cut it in this. You need to have a Bible. You need to have that plan.
You got to have a plan. That's exactly right, Chuck. I'm telling you, nobody, I wouldn't advise my kids. I tell them, hey, if you guys don't figure out a system and a way to make good decisions and be a good steward, use management, learn how to control your emotions, don't let fear be the thing that controls you, don't let greed be the thing that controls you, realize that your opinion is below the market. The market is always right. Don't argue with it. It'll just cost you money. Learn that your opinion is just that. It's an opinion. And if it isn't doing what you think it should do, you're wrong. Your opinion is just that. It's an opinion. And the market disagrees with you. Don't argue with them. You know, don't argue with them. They will take your money.
Yeah.
You know, why would you do that? If arguing is going to cost you money, just don't do it.
Yep. Well, Ron Tank of Moses of Wall Street and RonTank.com. This has really been, I'm going to use a word, enlightening, and quite the learning experience for me. So I thank you very much for your time. There it is. I said your .com 3 times.
There you go. So you're learning already, Chuck. You've mastered it already in one day.
I am. Is there anything else that you wanted to add, Ron, before we close out our session today?
Not really, Chuck, but I would just encourage people to learn, you know, how to operate in the markets, learn themselves, you know, and I think that to me, the Bible is the best way to learn about yourself and what you should be as a person and what you shouldn't be. You know, the greed and fear and all those emotional things. The Bible talks a lot about that, and there's a lot of good encouragement not to operate on fear, not to be greedy, mm-hmm. you know, all that kind of stuff. And I would encourage people to make the effort to educate themselves and their kids on the markets. The opportunities, Chuck, are tremendous. They're constant. People don't even recognize that there's stocks out there that have went up 300% in the last 5 months that are probably new leaders, and they have no idea that they're even out there. Why? Because they're not looking. They wouldn't know what to look for, how to go about looking for it. They don't know any of that. And I would say, hey, educate yourself. Wall Street's not a bad place. It's just an address. But it is a way of, there is a way to invest your money, and you can actually profit from somebody else's business that they're building. that's life-changing for maybe millions of people, like Apple, you know, with the iPhone. So and they come about every 2, 3, 4, 5 years. There's going to be a new set of them out there, Chuck, people haven't heard about. They're going to start out and go, and they're going to do really well. And I would just encourage people to look at Wall Street, look at investing as an opportunity for you to not have to work quite so hard, as you can put your money to work for you. But you need to be objective, look at investing as positive, look at yourself as a steward, not a gambler, but a steward who actually makes decisions, and then go out there and go for it. That's what I would say.
Thank you, Ron.
You're welcome. I appreciate being on, Chuck. It's been fun. It's always fun.